This is the Android Buffet Podcast, episode number 426, recorded Thursday, January 24th, 2019, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Another exciting episode of the Android Buffet Podcast.
Now with more Thursday.
And currently with a weird audio issue.
Yes.
That I'll have to figure out afterwards, but we are doing the best we can because we are, for some reason, late. Because I've been sitting here since Wednesday waiting for Jerry to show up.
I showed up.
Yeah, but I missed you.
Yes, you did. Okay, so here's what happened. And my apologies. So Sunday, my daughter and I went out to see the Super Blood Wolfman. This was about 11 o'clock at night. And it's pert near freezing outside. It was like 34 degrees, which is, you know, for us Floridians is way too cold. But there we were. And we spent about 20, 30 minutes outside in the cold. We spent the rest of the time just in the car looking up to the sunroof, but we were there. So for like the next 3 days, I had a headache that just would not go away. I'd take a nap. I'd wake up. I'd do some work. I'd take a nap. And anyway, so Wednesday, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I said, okay, I'm taking another nap. Popped some ibuprofen, took a nap, went to sleep, and I woke up Thursday morning. Now, the good news is I feel way better today than I did yesterday.
So, what was the bad news?
The bad news is I missed our recording.
Well, I can't say I wasn't disappointed.
I'm sorry. I did not think I would sleep that long.
I'm still trying to figure out the audio issue. Oh, well. I'll figure it out at some point. But
so if we have audio quality issues today, please be patient with us.
Well, no, it should be fine to hear. The problem is usually in order to make sure that we're leveled correctly, since I have this tendency to, after I calibrate, just look to the left and the right, which causes me to sound like I'm fading away, since the microphone is straight ahead. I adjust my audio afterwards by using an old school trick where I put myself into the right channel and I put Jerry into the left channel, and then I mix them together after we're done. But today, since for some odd reason two channels aren't working, we're both on the same channel. So if I am talking lower than Jerry, it's a little more noticeable.
Yes, because you can't fix it.
Yeah, well, can't have everything. I'm making an effort to look at the microphone when I'm actually talking into it.
Make eye contact.
With a microphone.
Yes. Put little googly eyes on it if you have to.
Well, the thing is that I've just moved the show notes onto the monitor that's directly behind it instead of the other monitor.
Ah, there you go.
Let's see. There is a new version of Home Assistant.
What?
Yeah, they finally released their Lovelace UI, which was in beta for previous versions.
So the Lovelace UI is spiffy, huh? My understanding is it's nice, but it means there's no defaults. I mean, you have to build it from scratch yourself.
Actually, no. In 0.86, there are defaults.
Really? Nice.
That was one of the changes. Now, I haven't had time to... there's a customizer, and I haven't really had time to play with it.
So you don't have to customize it via the
via YAML file?
Yes, that's what it was, the YAML file.
No. But I do have some stuff that I need to play with in that regard.
I have a plan for my new, you remember how we were talking about, I wasn't really happy with running HassIO on, or HassOS on a Raspberry Pi?
Yes.
I found a solution.
What was your solution?
My solution is Unraid.
That can work.
And then I will run it in a Docker along with the Mosquito and all the other things that I need to run, and it'll have real hard drives and real CPU behind it. And I like that.
I like that too. That's why mine has that. Admittedly, you are going a little more than I am, because remember, my installation has, let's see, it's using a Nuke, which is a Celeron processor. So it's not exactly right. Powerful, but it's still better than a Pi.
Yep.
I have to actually make some fixes because I think my database is not working right now.
Speaking of Home Assistant.
Yes.
We've talked about the alarm systems before, right?
Yeah, you especially said that you were wiring up alarm systems.
Right. So connected.io. Connected.io, their modules are good for if your house has been wired for sensors, but you don't have an alarm system there and you would like to hook it up into your system. But if you have an alarm in there, it wouldn't work. Well, last month, Connected put into beta what they're calling the Connected interface. And basically what this is it's a connected board, but you can piggyback it onto existing alarms. So instead of hooking it up to the wires, you would hook it up to the boards that for your alarm system, and it would monitor those so that it would still be able to send you the, it would still be able to send Home Assistant or MQTT or whatever the events as they happen. And there are even, he even includes relays so that if you have a zone set for as a key switch to arm it and disarm it, then you can arm your system and disarm it from Home Assistant. So I eventually will be getting a set of those. I'm excited about that.
You should be. It sounds interesting.
Although I'm not sure if I'm going to need it. I don't know how much Alarm.com actually integrates into Home Assistant. I know that there is a plugin for it, but I don't know how much it does. I've looked at the source code and I really can't figure it out. Python is such a mystery to me.
Well, I finally got used to some languages. I'm not sure if I want to get used to any more.
So that's my story. I will actually, this weekend, one of my goals is to get the Unraid server up and running.
Which is a good goal. My goal is to fix some things that I have a problem with. The only one I've been putting off seriously is I want to replace the module in my fan, the one that stopped working.
Mm-hmm.
But the other module is tucked under the fan bracket, and I've been putting off fixing it because I do not want to rip the fan down and put it back up, because I consider that a two-person job.
Sure.
I've seen one person do it, but I am not that one person.
Now, you know, they normally have a little hook in there that you can, that will hold the fan while you're working on the wires.
Yeah. But that's a little more complicated than I was prepared to do last time, and I'm trying to decide if I want to do that, because I have the module sitting here waiting to go. So this would turn it from a Zigbee fan to a Z-Wave, not a Z-Wave, to a Wi-Fi fan. Or specifically an MQTT fan.
And what are you putting in its place? What box?
It is actually a Sonoff iFan 02 that I have flashed with alternative firmware.
You're a big Sonoff fan, huh? Those are working out for you.
Once you get rid of the software, yes. But there's no easy way to flash this thing, so it involved me trying to hold a jumper onto another cable because I did not want to solder any wires.
Sure.
I've gotten very creative in my ability to press one thing against another thing in order to achieve my goal.
And yet you do.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it working.
Awesome.
But let's see what else. I still have some motion sensors to work on, and I got a really good deal on additional Zigbee door sensors, so I'm going to be replacing the last of my Z-Wave ones because they kept failing anyway.
So Zigbee, are you going to replace Zigbee with anything with Z-Wave, or are you going to try and go Wi-Fi?
Well, I have a lot of trouble with Z-Wave. I have a lot of trouble with Zigbee, and I don't have very much trouble with Wi-Fi. But Wi-Fi doesn't work for battery-operated devices.
Right.
So most of my wired devices, I'm switching over to Wi-Fi. For the other devices, I have a combination of Z-Wave and Zigbee, and it depends on the device. So these, I found that the door sensors that I was able to get for, that run off of Zigbee are actually better.
So now, how many devices are you going to be able to get onto Wi-Fi without interference starting to be an issue?
Oh, I have a 5 gigahertz and a 2.4 gigahertz network, and I have a one-bedroom apartment. How many devices could I need?
Ah, okay, fair point. But most of your Wi-Fi Internet of Things aren't going to operate on 5 gigahertz. They're going to be on 2.4 gigahertz,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but most of my computers are on 5.
I see.
I can segment it that way. But we'll see what happens. I still have a few things that have problems, and I still have some logic issues with the motion sensing, presence sensing, and a few things related to that that I want to tweak. So we'll see what happens over the weekend. I probably have a lot of software stuff to do. Because now that I have Lovelace, I'm probably going to redesign my entire interface. Because I don't have to fiddle with a YAML file. I don't have anything against the YAML file, but the fact that I can point and click and design an interface seems easier to me. I can configure things, but my visual sensibilities are always somewhat limited.
Okay.
So, in some Android news, Google has offered more details on their 64-bit app requirement.
Meaning, if your app includes native code, that native code is going to have to compile. Is going to have to be compiled with 64.
And updated apps as of August of 2019 must include a 64-bit version. And then by August of 2021, the Play Store will stop serving non-64-bit apps to 64-bit capable devices. So it's if your device, as of August of 2021, if your device is a 64-bit device, then the Play Store will no longer give it non-64-bit apps.
Cool.
So that's a nice migration pattern. A little slower than I would expect, but, you know, what can you do?
I wonder why.
My guess is that they're worried about some apps that people are not going to update. And it's not exactly a critical thing, 64 versus 32.
I know, but why do they care if it's 64 or 32? I mean, even on Windows and Linux machines, they run 64-bit or 32-bit code on 64-bit machines all the time.
Well, my guess is that they are trying to make things simpler. So they're trying to move people so that they do not have to maintain two different sets.
I'm not sure I buy it. I think there's something more nefarious.
Nefarious?
At play.
Over 64-bit code? That's a nefarious topic?
No, they're anti-32-bit code, and we don't know why.
Well, who knows what those other 32 bits are hiding?
All right. Yeah. Anyway, speaking of hiding things.
Yes. I want to hear where the segue is going.
Fingerprint scanners.
Yes.
If they're optical, maybe they're not secure enough to hide the things that need to be hidden.
Yeah, so
actually, okay, that was a stretch, but Google is saying that optical fingerprint sensors may not be secure enough for Android for payment stuff anymore.
Yeah, but just to emphasize, these are the scanners that are used by smartphones that feature in-display fingerprint sensors. So this would be different if it was not in the display.
Well, that's not the way I read it. As I understand it right now, everything is an optical fingerprint reader.
Yeah, but the question I was trying to figure out was, are they talking about all of them or just the ones that were designed to be embedded in screens? Because there's sort of an implication that it might have just been one type of optical sensor.
I think it's all of them. And what they're going to switch to is if it's a ultrasonic fingerprint reader, then that's more secure.
Yeah.
But in my reading of it, all the opticals were not good.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out why there's a reference in the article that I linked to specifically the ones that are in display as opposed to on the back. Either way, I think all of them, if they're optical, have the possibility of being spoofed. So,
yep.
But I don't know if I got the impression there might be more concern from certain types than others. But we'll see. Android Q's new permission controls offer apparently some new and improved UI elements.
Yay!
Well, there were some nice pictures.
There was, and there was a video of... So this is absolutely a time to check out the show notes. There was a video showing P and Q right by each other. And I don't know.
It seems like they're looking at making it clearer what their permissions are.
Yes. But there were some other things in there that kind of bugged me. Like moving the battery, you know, at the very beginning when they were showing the unlock screen.
Yeah.
The unlock screen seemed like it took a step backwards.
You know, for every step forward, there are two steps backwards.
Which is why you should face backwards when you want to go forwards.
I'm just pausing because I don't quite get that statement.
Okay. And they, Android Q is also bringing additional controls for carriers to, you know, do things that carriers do that consumers don't like carriers to do.
You mean locking down phones?
Yeah.
Well, these things happen. Unfortunately, it's a fact of life.
Yeah.
And it's not like at the moment the government is going to stop them because the U.S. government is on vacation. Or rather, that's the polite way to talk about the current political situation in the United States. But I think cell phone carrier regulation is probably the last thing on everybody's mind.
It is certainly the last thing on mine.
And there is an opinion piece that it is time to kill off the Android tablet.
I'll buy that. It's interesting that the iPad was successful, but Android tablets less so.
Well, I have an 8-inch Android tablet, and it's starting to get a bit long in the tooth, and while I considered replacing it, I've come to the conclusion that there's nothing that I would spend enough money on to justify it.
Right.
So I have that touchscreen Chromebook that folds over that I got refurbished.
Sure.
So a 10-inch touchscreen Chromebook is my replacement for an 8-inch Android tablet.
I'll buy that. And probably significantly more functional.
Well,
possibly even cheaper.
Well, the only reason that I tend to bring that when I go on trips is because I cannot open my regular computer on a plane. Especially if the person in front of me wants to lean their seat back. On my last flight, I was trying to eat my meal, and the person in front of me wanted to lie down. It's always nice when they make an announcement. Would you please bring your seats to the upright position because we will now be serving our meal? And the response of the person in front of me is invariably to recline into me.
I have never heard that announcement.
Well, how often have you lately flown on planes that actually have meals still?
A few times.
I don't go on that many. But the last few ones I've been on, they've made an announcement saying, well, while we are serving the meal, we would appreciate it if you moved your seat into the upright position so that everyone can have an enjoyable meal.
No, nope, I haven't nice heard
thing.
That.
It's actually a very nice thing to say.
Upright seats are so uncomfortable.
I don't know. I find sometimes I can sleep better that way. Anyway, that's a bit off topic, but I'm still in the market for the perfect combination of travel gear. So after the experience when I was in Florida recording this program with you and getting annoyed at my Chewy lapbook, which is the I've been working on a replacement that has a little more power to it.
Sure.
So I was able to secure an open box laptop with a i5 in it.
Wow. That's pretty beefy.
Really?
Well, for a small laptop, sure.
Yeah, well, that's why I bought OpenBox. I don't care if it's been previously loved. I don't care if the software isn't working because I wipe it immediately. So I didn't get a bad deal. Moving along, ES File Explorer apparently has a vulnerability that exposes files to anybody on the same network.
Egad.
And the response from the developers who took it over, who have already been criticized in the past, seems to be... I'm going to say less than comforting.
Well, that's a reason to immediately uninstall it, in my opinion.
Well, I immediately uninstalled it when the current developers took over.
Okay. Uninstalling.
I'm fine with files by Google.
Uninstalled.
Because files by the file app by Google now has 100 million installs in the Play Store.
Yep.
And I've been using that.
And you find that to be perfectly acceptable.
Well, what do you do with files on your phone? I move them. I rename them. You don't really need an advanced app for that.
I wish it would default to the list mode instead of the grid mode, but whatever. Anyway, yes, files by Google is perfectly sufficient.
And have you tried digital well-being on your phone?
I have.
How do you feel about it?
I don't really do anything with it anymore. Well, I'm sure it's there collecting data, but that's about it.
I have not done anything with it. But Action Dash, which is from the developer of Action Launcher, has launched a competing digital well-being product. So it doesn't require Pi or any of the well-being tools. It runs on any Android device using their usage access feature.
Mm-hmm.
So you can export your history and restore it. It doesn't go to any third-party service. There's no 7-day limit on stats if you pay for the full version. And according to this comparison, it runs on all devices, allows you to visualize system app usage, visualize device session time, let's see what we have here, daily usage summary notification. It has a dark theme, customizations, weekly average usages, unlimited usage history, and manual backup options.
Man, I don't even know how to get to the digital well-being.
Neither do I. I've been meaning to look.
I mean, it popped up for a little while, and I, you know, thought, okay, that's cool. But.
Well, because it's installed on my phone, and I've never actually looked for it. I assume if it's like similar Google Apps, then it's installed itself under the settings menu.
Hey, there it is.
Where? Under time spent in apps?
Under settings. Wow. I spent 49 minutes on my phone today.
So you can actually set it to show the app in the app list. There's a setting there for that.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So I may have a look at that. But either way, I've sort of put it off. But if you want to try a device that has similar, excuse me, an app that has similar features and all works on all devices, Action Dash is an option. And there's a free and there's a paid upgrade.
Cool.
Visible is adding Android support. So Visible is the prepaid network that the people at Verizon have been working on that was iOS only.
Right, because you signed up for the service, you paid for the service, you managed your service via an app.
Yes.
Now there's an Android app.
Yeah, so it's a single $40 plan with unlimited talk, text, and data on their 4G LTE network. So I've seen this before. You know, I have a bank that does this, where you, there's no bank, nowhere to go, just an app or a website, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. If you eliminate the infrastructure, then you can have cost savings.
Hey.
Hey, what?
I mean, yay.
I thought you said hey.
No, yay.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'm going to consider Visible the future of phone service. I'm actually reasonably happy with Project Fi, although my data usage has been creeping up. Although not as much as my mother. She apparently used 6 gigabytes on Facebook, which is interesting because she's not actually on Facebook. But I'm still trying to figure that one out. So here in the United States, Senator Rubio wants to ban states from protecting consumer privacy.
That's not what it... Well, actually...
It is technically.
That's actually kind of fairly accurate. That, although that does not mean that he wants to stop protecting consumer privacy.
No, he wants it to be a federal matter.
Yes.
So this is a preemption law where...
But it's also an extremely misleading title.
I agree. But the idea is that he has proposed a federal privacy law that would preempt any tougher laws issued by the states.
Yes.
And
or any weaker. Or any weaker laws.
Yeah. Well, actually, a stronger federal law would always preempt a weaker state law. However, a stronger state law is often not preempted by a weaker federal law. For example, this is controversial in California, where they have stronger emission standards than the rest of the country. And a lot of automakers go by the California standards because it's not financially viable for them to make different cars in different states.
So yeah, I don't think that's quite the same thing. However, yeah.
Well, I'm more saying that preemption is controversial.
I predict disaster.
In what sense?
In the sense that the GDPR has been a disaster for Europe. And this is essentially my take on it is, now granted, there are no laws yet. He's not even proposing any rules. All Marco Rubio is saying, hey, we need to, within the next couple of years, come up with some rules. That's all Rubio's said was, FTC, you need to come up with some privacy rules in the next 2 years.
Which is interesting because there's a current trend to not to avoid government regulation.
Yeah, right.
No, I meant that's.
I don't know what news you're watching.
Well, that's what the current ruling party seems to be against.
There is no ruling party.
Yes, there's chaos, but that's a whole other conversation. Anyway, so It is one of those things I like to mention because I always like to bring up privacy on the show.
I'm kind of on a mixed feelings about this because there's the one thing that, okay, so this privacy thing, the basic idea is if a company has personal data about you, you can ask that company and say, I want to see the personal data that you have so that I can correct it or at least know what you have. And the company has to provide it or delete it. And I don't think Google will have a problem with that. I don't think Apple will have a problem with that. You know who I think is going to have a problem with that? The credit unions. The credit bureaus.
I have a problem with them.
Right. They're going to have to share with us all of the information, of all of our personal information that they have. I don't think they're going to like that. So, I don't know. The credit bureaus are like the one place where I would really like to see that enforced.
And anyway. Those are the people who are going to fight tooth and nail.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a little sidebar.
So the Tick Watch, you have the Pro. I have the original E. The E2 and the S2 are now available. So I previously mentioned that the new version of these inexpensive Google Wear watches had been announced, but now they are available for sale and there is pricing.
Yes, and they're too expensive.
Well, wait for a sale.
No, I'm not buying these watches at all. Not with the 2200 in it. Or the 2100?
The 2100.
The 2100.
I didn't say you should buy them. I'm just saying that if somebody thinks they're too expensive and that's the only thing holding them back, then they can wait. If the issue is that they are waiting for a better processor, then they should wait for a better processor.
Yep. So the pricing, the E2 will be at a roughly $160, and the S2, which is a little bit tougher, will be for $180.
Yep. And of course, there is one final thing that may cause trouble for this program. Classic Hangouts has gotten a slow death start date.
What?
Yes. So if you are using Classic Hangouts, as it is now referred to, or previously known as Hangouts, they have decided that it will begin a retirement phase in October of 2019. So in October of 2019, if you are
G Suite users,
which is what I'm talking to you on.
Oh, okay. Oh, then, yeah, okay.
Yeah, then it will migrate over to their new Hangout chat. So we'll see what happens. They say that there should be no noticeable difference, but I will try to start preparing a alternative if I need one. But it is sad. Every time I like a product, I actually liked Hangouts, and I liked it even though I liked Talk and I got used to Hangouts. They fixed most of the problems I had. So I liked Talk. They got rid of Talk. I got used to Hangouts. Now they're getting rid of Hangouts. I don't know if I'm going to like chat.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of our list for this week. I'm sorry for the 24-hour delay on this program.
No, I'm sorry for the 24-hour delay because it's all my fault.
Yeah, but I'm sorry to the audience.
Oh. I'm sorry to the audience.
And hopefully by next week I'll figure out which wire I've accidentally crossed that's causing the audio to be a bit funny.
Are you saying you've got the streams crossed?
Yes.
Speaking of which, did you say that they're working on a Ghostbusters 3?
Yes, and it would have been better before one of the actors died. But
yeah. Did you say that one of the ladies from the 2016 Ghostbusters was highly upset that they're making a Ghostbusters 3?
Well, simultaneously, I am on both sides of that issue. On one hand, I understand why somebody who was in a reboot of a movie would say, okay, we did this 2 years ago, you didn't like it, and now you're saying, oh, let's go back to those guys. That's not really an endorsement of somebody's work.
Well, conversely, did they watch their work? I think they would understand.
Well, I don't know what their opinion is. I assume people like their own work, but I'm not going to say that that's a guarantee. But
now, I am often the biggest critic of my work is often myself.
Yeah, but going in the other direction, it's people have been asking for the original characters to make a reappearance for years, independent of the fact that they did a reboot.
And we don't know that they're going to have the original characters. I mean, we know that some of the original characters are involved in the production, but we don't know that they're going to be in there, the movie.
Well, if not, I think there'd be a different type of outcry. If you create another Ghostbusters movie that's a sequel to the original movie and you don't have the involvement of some of the original actors, then there's going to be a complaint because then it's back to isn't this just another reboot as opposed to a sequel?
I think if they are in it, they'll be as cameos to kind of, not quite as cameos, but like,
well,
the older crew handing down the torch.
Well, you have the other part of it, which is if you are the age of that the actors and the characters would be, I don't know if you run around chasing ghosts anymore.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you don't have a hand in the research side of the business.
Unfortunately, the research guy died.
No, you still have Dan Aykroyd's character.
Right, but Harold Ramis does.
Yes, regrettably, Harold Ramis is deceased. But what I'm saying is that there is something on the other side. You know, support. Also, ownership. The question is, if you had new Ghostbusters, would they be employees of the organization or would they be owners?
Or a franchise.
Yes, because what we need is...
And then we could have Ghostbusters New York and Ghostbusters Miami and Ghostbusters LA, where things get really weird.
I'm fine. I could live without a Ghostbusters franchise.
But we'll see. Eventually they're going to reboot Back to the Future.
No, they won't.
Yeah, they will.
Apparently there's a contract. There is a contractual issue that prevents that.
I'm sure they're going to get around it some way. I know.
Yes, wait until he dies and try to convince his heirs. How do you think they made another Mary Poppins movie? P.L. Travers would never allow another movie if she was still alive. She was really unhappy with the first one.
All right.
And the same thing. As much as I would probably enjoy an attempt at a Back to the Future movie, it is felt that there by the people involved that there is nothing further to do on the big screen. And considering the last movie that Robert Zemeckis did didn't do too well, Welcome to Marwin, I think. Who knows? You might be disappointed. The question is it better to enjoy a classic movie on its own than to ask for more of it? You might not like what you get.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a long-standing question that you'll never get an answer to. Because for everybody who will like a sequel to a classic movie, there are going to be 10 other people who won't.
Yes, but for those 10 people that won't, there'll be 100 that do.
I don't know.
If somebody thinks it will make money,
yeah.
Then
how many Fast and Furious movies are we up to now?
I don't know. 9, 10, something like that.
One of these days I'll have to watch one of them and see if they're worth it. They don't seem like it.
I think they are. I enjoy them. But, I mean, don't...
Should they stop making Die Hard movies?
Actually, no. I think 2 and 3 sucked, but... Like the laters, they were pretty good.
I don't really like them. I like 3.
3 was okay. 2 was abysmal. 2, I think, was the worst of the series.
I haven't forgiven them for killing Colm Meaney. Also, the plot was unrealistic, but that's neither here nor there. Are we allowed, 30 years after a movie to spoil the plot?
I think so.
Okay. In Die Hard 2, somebody takes over an airport and is going to crash the planes at the airport unless a bunch of things happen. So they take an airport hostage. However, even back then, that would be pretty impossible. The series of events there requires not only a suspension of disbelief, but a suspension of common sense.
A lot of movies are like that.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Disbelief and common sense. I can do suspension of disbelief. Suspension of common sense is just harder for me.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to make up something that is completely impossible, that could never happen the way that it's planned out, in order to make your plot work, then there's a problem. If you have to create a scenario that is extremely unlikely in order to make your plot work, then fine. Unlikely and impossible are two different things. And again, if it's science fiction, I'll accept impossible, as long as it makes logical, consistent sense within the narrative. So if you were creating a time travel movie, time travel may be impossible, or it may not be. We don't know. However, if you are creating a universe where science that doesn't exist does exist, you at least have to be consistent within whatever science you made up. You can tell me I'm wrong about that one.
I prefer not to think too much when it comes to movies.
Okay.
Wow. Talk about a tangent at the end of the show.
Yeah. So since we've gone on that tangent, we've had technical difficulties, and we're 24 hours late with this program, I'm suggesting that we adjourn until next week.
Call it a week. Bye, folks.
Until next time.